Good morning. I'm Dave Taffet. I am here with Laron Landis and
who are you?
And Letitia.
Letitia.
we know. And Letitia, who's new with us, we're also planning your first annual going away party. It's going to be in July.
Yes, it'll be probably end of July because I start my new job in the beginning of August. So.
And Letitia is moving. She decided she wanted to live in a marriage equality state rather than in Texas. So she's moving to Iowa. She had all these good choices. She picked Iowa.
Why Iowa?
I'll be working for the University of Iowa, so in psychiatry. So.
Okay.
Good. Until then, she'll be our psychiatrist.
And I'll be 3 hours from Chicago. So.
That's nice.
It is nice. Today we have with us guests from the Equality Ride, which is a project of Soul Force. Soul Force, an organization that really started right here in Dallas with Mel White. And I understand Mel White's not part of Soul Force anymore. He's kind of transitioned off. He's living out in California now with his partner, Gary. For those of you who don't know Mel White from when he lived here in Dallas or from when he started Soul Force, you know him from, what's it called, Amazing Race, which he competed in with his son. Mm-hmm. But we have some of the Equality Riders who are here today, and Mason, you are the co-director of the ride.
Right, so I'm a co-director also with another colleague, Jason. Yeah, Jason and Mason.
And tell us a little bit, what is the ride? You started in Philadelphia, you're going to end up in San Francisco, which of course means that you have to drive through Dallas because they took a direct. They're zigzagging.
We're good at straight lines, yeah? But so sort of like you're saying, so the Equality Ride is a program of Soul Force, so we're sort of the, it's really the largest program that Soul Force puts on. And what it is, it's a 2-month social justice bus tour around the country where we're taking about 17 folks, young LGBTQ activists, and allied activists on this tour, where we stop off at religious schools and other places that have other religious institutions that have anti-LGBTQ policies. And so what we're doing sort of this ride, we're going to about 11 different cities. We'll be stopping off in each place for about 5 days. And so while we're there, we'll be engaging with staff, students, and administrators on these campuses, as well as we'll be interacting with affirming spaces off campus and sort of interacting with community members to talk to people about policies such as those, as well as to work on more intersectional justice issues. So we want to kind of, this is the fifth ride that's happened, and the first one was in 2006, and so since then we've just been progressing and making sure that we're including way more parts of what it means to be a social justice, you know, movement.
You started in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you've done so far. What are some of the stops you've made, some of the more interesting connections that you've made?
You're like, what is all the dirt? Like, what's happening?
Okay. So let's get down to it. What's the dirt?
Have there been any surprises, like when you, in certain cities, you're like, I didn't expect that, or has everything happened pretty much as you expected?
I'm going to actually let one of the other writers sort of jump in on that. So I'm looking over at J.D. Melendez.
Okay, J.D.
So what I find to be a surprise, and it really shocked me, is I expected every city, every town, every school we went to be met with a lot of anger and aggression or a lot of opposition. And I'm finding that it's quite the opposite, that most of the places we go, we're met with open arms, with a lot of willingness to have conversations. And even if it may not be that case in every school we go to, the community that comes out to meet us, I mean, from the churches to community groups, as well as people.
Yeah, why don't we switch microphones there? Because, yeah,
there we go.
That's better.
All right. And even people like meeting us up at the bus, just coming up to the bus to talk to us when they see us parked to get lunch or something. It's been a lot of love and a lot of support, and I really appreciate that.
Give me a couple of the stops that you've made where you've been either nicely greeted and you didn't expect to, or not so nicely and you expected better.
I always go back to our stop in Nashville, Nashville, Tennessee, where we met with Lipscomb University for a couple of days, and they really, like, pulled out all the stops for us. It was like a 2-day, 2.5-day meeting with them, and where we spoke with everyone from administrators to students, and it was really a beautiful reception. And then on the other side of that coin, at the end of our, at the last day of our trip to Tribeca, it was a half day, and we ended up going to Lipscomb. It was a half day, and we ended up going to Tribeca Nazarene University. And although they met us with, they opened up their campus to us, it was quite a different feel when we went inside. And it was really kind of a shocker to spend 2.5 days having wonderful dialogue and then spending an afternoon with Tribeca Nazarene, and it kind of switched up on us a little bit there.
So the majority of the campuses you went to, were they in large cities or in small towns, or is it 50-50, or what would you say is the majority of your trip?
And this is Zachary, yeah.
So historically, yes, we visited a lot of small towns and universities within those towns and spent a couple of days there, but this ride we're focusing on, I guess, mostly metropolitan areas, and then being able to spend about 3 or 4 days, 4 or 5 days within that area, not only doing work with the schools and trying to have dialogue with them, but also working on the community around those schools to empower and support the groups that will be there when we leave to start to work with those students or with those student groups, or being able to support them. So mostly metropolitan areas this time with them.
And those are usually, I mean, stereotypically, metropolitan areas where you would think you would be most welcome. But that's not always the case.
Well, I think in people's assumptions, I think a lot of times what we get, people ask the question of, who is, what region or what is the place or part of the country in which there is the most opposition. And the reality is that, you know, like we're saying, there's sort of over 200 schools that have these policies that are anti-LGBTQ, or that where you can be kicked out, or you can lose your job, or, you know, or what have you. And that those are everywhere. It's not like one place. And so I think that is shocking to people, that there's metropolitan areas, that these places that can be close by these cities or other things where this is still happening.
That's a good point. You just pointed out, to my surprise, people still are surprised when they learn, or when we tell them that, you know, you can still be fired for being gay. But beyond that, just being in school, it's one thing to not have sexual orientation included included in their non-discrimination policies, but it's another thing that you can actually be kicked out for it. And I mean, is that stated also, is there just they just do it?
And Cole, because you're in school right now. Yeah.
Right. I'm a student at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Eastern Mennonite is not a school where I would necessarily be expelled for being queer. However, there's a policy on the books there that if you have sex outside of marriage, that's an offense that could be punished. And in fact, in 2004, two faculty members were let go because they were openly gay and living with their partners. I think that a lot of universities tend not toward those extreme examples of expulsion, but there are other instances where students are required to enter into, say, reparative therapy, and that's really damaging. Studies show that it's really problematic and not effective.
Studies show it's not real therapy. No organization accepts it. Other than you, Letitia, right?
No, not in our research.
Oh, okay. But I mean, it's quack therapy. I hate to even call it therapy.
Yeah, right. They don't even have real therapists.
Also, if a student is expelled from the university, a really significant thing that can happen later is that their transcripts can be sealed, and so you might spend, say, 3.5 years in university and how many tens of thousands of dollars, and then lose all of that.
That is horrible.
Right, and they're certainly not giving you back your money. And you're working on what degree right now? Because I find this fascinating. I love this.
Conflict transformation at the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding.
And have you had chance to use it on your campus yet?
Absolutely, yeah. I in fact, this past summer, coordinated a project with a classmate, Amanda Gross, at the Mennonite National Convention, advocating for LGBT inclusion in the Mennonite Church.
And getting anywhere with that, you think, or?
Yeah, slowly but surely, I think that the Mennonite Church is coming around.
When you say coming around, I mean, obviously, one of your stops here in Dallas is going to be at Dallas Baptist, and we're going to talk about that, Dallas Baptist University. And obviously, you're not planning on going to a place and starting off with there's no acceptance, and when you leave, oh, we love our gay students, and we're starting a GSA here, and we're just going to celebrate Gay Pride Month. That's not going to happen. What you're really talking about are steps. In some cases, maybe just making the campus a little safer for the gay students. What are the steps that you've seen at your school?
Well, in terms of steps, we talk about kind of three phases. So there's tolerance, and then there's acceptance, and then there's affirmation. And so increasingly, we're seeing schools that are tolerant, and that's a great place to start. However, what we're pushing toward is affirmation ultimately. And at Eastern Mennonite University, just in the last 3 years, really, a student group called Safe Space has been developed and is now officially recognized on campus. And that's a place where LGBTQ and allied students can come and be safe and talk about their experiences and get support from faculty and staff and one another.
And that's a great first step.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's basically one of the jobs of a GSA.
Right. And that's why the Equality Ride will not go to Eastern Mennonite University, but we will be sending one of our riders is a sophomore there. And so Christian Parks will be carrying on the tradition there.
Okay. JD, tell us a little bit about your, because you're the one who planned the actual event here in Dallas. Tell us what you're doing here in Dallas. You got here on Monday, or you got here Sunday? Got here Monday.
We got here late Sunday night, and then we went to sleep.
Okay.
And Monday,
Monday you did, what did you do Monday? Somebody help. SMU.
Yes, okay. Yes. We met with SMU, Perkins School of Theology, where we met with the students there, and we had dinner, and we met with Randy Roberts Potts, the grandson of Oral Roberts, and he created a wonderful art installation called The Gay Agenda, and we watched Love Free or Die, the documentary about Bishop Gene Robinson, the first openly gay Episcopal bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday we went to Planned Parenthood and we volunteered with them, and that was amazing. They're an amazing organization. And we had dinner with MCC of Greater Dallas, and they were awesome. They paid for our stay while in Dallas, which is huge, and made us a great dinner. And then last night we met with UNT Denton and other area schools and had a affirming LGBTQ Bible study. Today we'll be meeting with the North Texas Food Bank to help in disaster relief, and tonight we'll be at Cathedral of Hope for dinner and service.
And then tomorrow is your big day at Dallas Baptist. Now, we spoke on the phone last week, and after I spoke to you, JD, I spoke to one of the deans at Dallas Baptist, and I didn't get the reaction I expected. I don't know why, but he got on the phone. He said, "Oh yeah, we've had them here before." And Cole, you were on a ride where you stopped at Dallas Baptist before, so I want you to talk about that for a second. But you know, he said, "Yeah, we're having them on campus. They're going to be here for a discussion that we're going to start off with." With the conversation with the administration, and then they'll discuss with the faculty, and then an open forum with the students. I mean, that sounds like any liberal university would do. but this is Dallas Baptist. They're not. They don't. They just don't tend to have that reputation here in Dallas. But as nice as could be, they sounded like. One of the things he said was, "We've had them here before. We had a nice discussion." And Cole, you've done the ride before.
Yeah, this is my second tour. I also participated in 2008.
And tell us what the visit to Dallas Baptist was like.
So in 2008, we were met with a lot more hostility at a number of schools throughout that tour. We concentrated on the Deep South, and we're in a lot of small towns. And Dallas Baptist University was one of very few schools that allowed us on campus that year. I think that there was a little bit of trepidation in 2008, but I'm grateful that clearly we had a positive impact there, and that the dialogue felt healthy and productive for them as well as us. So 4 years later, we've got the opportunity to continue in that conversation and hopefully advocate for further progression along that journey toward affirmation.
In taking small steps, nobody's going to call that school gay affirming, but in taking small steps, just the difference in the approach. The first time, I'm sure there was a lot of, who are these people? What are they doing to us? And this time, sure, we're having them. I mean, these were his words. Sure, we had a nice conversation last time. We're looking forward to having a nice conversation again. Looking at it from the other side, the way I would look at it is, I don't agree with these people, but my faith is strong now. I can have a discussion, and maybe we can even convince them to do it our way. Did you get any of that?
No, I was just going to ask, at some of these schools like Dallas Baptist, are there any gay groups that came and spoke with you all, or any openly LGBTQ folks that came and spoke with you all? I would think, being on a campus like that, it'd be very closeted.
So an interesting shift in the last 4 years of doing the Equality Ride has been Facebook, which is much more readily used. So in 2008, some of the organizing that I was doing in preparation for the ride was through MySpace. Does anyone remember what MySpace was?
Does MySpace still exist?
Right. My understanding at this point is that we do not yet have LGBTQ contacts at Dallas Baptist University. I would not be surprised if we leave campus that day without students, not necessarily students who are out to the campus at large, but folks who come to us and share their stories. And that's a big piece of what the Equality Ride is about. It's about reaching out to those students on these campuses that feel isolated and alone, and affirming for them that first and foremost, God loves and affirms them just the way they are, and secondly, that they have a community. They've got a whole bus full of community, in fact, that's willing to travel across the country just to assure them that they are loved.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a break. We're talking to riders from the Equality Ride, which is a project of Soul Force. We have four riders, one publicity person in the studio. We're shifting around microphones, so just need everybody to be a little bit patient with us today, but I think we have the microphone thing worked out. JD, Cole, Zachary, and Mason, thank you for being with us. Stick around. Lauren, you have your entertainment report. That'll be right after this break.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
KNON wants you to know how you can help those in your community affected by this week's storms. Paul Quinn College has started a drive to help those in need. Quinnites for Lancaster Supplies Drive is accepting donations of canned goods, toiletries, bottled water, blankets, towels, tents, and medical supplies. Donated items can be dropped off at Paul Quinn College's security gate located at 3837 Simpson Stewart Road in Dallas. To arrange a pickup of donated items, the number is 214-379-5577.
Laurent, you're not used to running the board. Laurent's standing in front of the board. He's looking at me.
No,
like,
I was just waiting.
He's looking at me like I'm nuts because I'm, yeah, okay.
Okay, there we are. All right, the battle between Melissa Etheridge and her ex-partner actress, Tamalane Michaels, has become the never-ending battle. Now, shortly after they broke up over 2 years ago, Tamalane claimed that Melissa had left her and the two kids high and dry with no money. Now, Tamalane has filed papers claiming that she receives $23,000 a month in spousal and child support. But she says that's not enough. She wants more money.
Yeah, it wouldn't be enough for me either.
Oh, it wouldn't? You know, because she
I just couldn't live on that.
Oh, because she got used to the, you know, the luxurious, extravagant lifestyle when she was with Melissa.
The big salaries,
yeah,
the big bucks.
I know.
Here,
I know. What will we do with that? So she wants more money. Next month they're going to have a settlement conference to try and hash all this out. Come on, $23,000 a month? Aren't you being a little greedy?
No, I couldn't live on anything.
There's some good news for the transgender female beauties out there. The Miss Universe pageant will join other competitions like the Olympics, America's Next Top Model, and the Girl Scouts in revising its official policy to allow transgender women to participate.
The Girl Scouts is not a competition. America's Top Girl Scout doesn't exist.
No, it's
have you seen those
that's true.
Have you seen those Girl Scout cookies? That is
that
a competition.
That is a competition. You're right.
Yeah.
That's true. Good point, Letitia.
Exactly.
Thanks for the say. GLAAD and Miss Universe, which, hey, if you, in case you didn't know, is owned by our such good friend, ally, Donald Trump.
Yes.
They made the announcement yesterday after the controversy surrounding contestant Jenna Tlakuba, who's transgender and was disqualified from the Miss Universe competition in Canada. So I'm really surprised about this for...
Who was, like, in the top 10.
She was, like, in the top 10.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm surprised that they are allowing transgender women to compete, because I've always heard that you can't have any plastic surgery. That's one of the rules.
Except for the one who had plastic surgery who won last year that Donald Trump had paid for.
No, that was the Miss Universe.
Or year before. Yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't.
It was the Miss California person.
Yeah, but that was the Miss Universe.
It was going into the Miss America competition?
I think so, yeah.
No.
And she didn't win. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, but anyway, that's just what I've heard. So, that's interesting. So, good. I can't wait to see more transgender beauties up there. And last, Chaz Bono made history last season when he became the first transgender contestant on ABC's Dancing with the Stars. Now he's supposedly in talks for a new dating reality show. Chaz and his longtime girlfriend, Jennifer Leah, parted ways last year, and now Chaz is back on the hunt for love. Now, the project is still in very early development. The producers, Fenton Bailey and Randy Barbato, also work with Chaz on the documentary film Becoming Chaz, which aired on OWN, Oprah's Network, which is a really good show. So, looking forward to that. Any takers out there that want to go on a date with Chaz?
Well, Chaz, when Chaz was Chastity and first came out as a lesbian, where was the first place?
Chastity right here on Lambda Weekly.
Yes, we were the first show Chastity was on as an open lesbian, and I'm annoyed that he didn't call us when
back.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We do. It's been 12 years? More than that. Since Chaz was on. Anyway, we're talking to the Equality Riders. The Equality Ride, Mason. Just give us a quickie, just for people who are in their cars and didn't hear what Equality Ride is. Just give us a quickie what Equality Ride is.
So the Equality Ride is a 2-month social justice bus tour, right now taking around 17 LGBTQA activists around the country for a nonviolent movement where we stop off at religious institutions and schools that have anti-LGBTQ policies.
Right. I want to know what inspired some of you to do this. Let's start with you, JD, because you have such a happy family story.
Exactly, yes. I don't think I've ever heard my family described that way, but okay. I was raised in a born-again fundamentalist Christian family, and when I was younger, my church was everything to me. We were there at least 6 days a week, minute I woke up, went to bed, unless there was school in the middle. And it was really, it was my community. And when I was 13, I was outed by my youth pastor to my family, and I was kicked out of my house, and I spent 7 years homeless in New York City. I was picked up by an organization. I went there for a drop-in, get something to eat, somewhere to relax for a little while, and I really became involved with their program. They put me in like youth leadership, and this was Greenwich Village Youth Council's The Neutral Zone, and the staff there really took an interest in me, and they wouldn't let me give up on life. They wouldn't let me stop trying. So they kept telling me, you know, you can go. I remember it was very interesting the first time they told me, like, why don't you apply to go away to school? And it never was a reality to me. I grew up in a low-income neighborhood. People in my neighborhood didn't go to college. And it was just...
You grew up actually in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Which is the poorest, probably, of the five boroughs of New York City.
Yeah, and the neighborhood I lived in the Bronx was probably one of the poorest of those.
And I was born in the Bronx, too.
Yeah.
And I grew up talking like this.
Yeah.
It's not my radio voice anymore, but... So let's just talk here a little bit. So you grew up in the Bronx, and you're out on the street. Where did you live? Where did you sleep?
Well, I mean, until I found these organizations, I slept under the jungle gym a few blocks from my house. And then once I found the organizations and the jobs that they allowed me to, I had a lot of, like, stipend jobs with a few different organizations. And I tried to work as much as possible. I was quite fortunate. And I ended up moving... I basically spent 3 seasons of the year, like, on the street, sleeping in organizations, and I would save up through those seasons to try to get through winter, and I would pay somebody to let me couch surf or stay in their house through the winter. So that's how I did it.
So as far as school, I mean, you were kicked out at 14, and so you were basically still in high school at the time. How did you continue your education? Were you able to? Were you... lagging behind, or were you able to still attend school? And or because
he wasn't lagging behind, he's one of my peeps. He was ahead.
I dropped out when I was 15 because it was too hard.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I received my GED before my high school class graduated.
Wow.
So, although I wasn't in quote unquote
public
normal
school,
I still finished that out.
You studied you. One way or the other, to get you to the point where you could get your GED.
Yes, I did.
And then this organization in Greenwich Village helped you apply for a scholarship.
Yeah, I applied for the James Baldwin Scholars Program at Hampshire College. And Hampshire College is a small liberal arts school in western Massachusetts. And I ended up... it's for youth of color who have the means but not the potential. I mean, the potential but not the means to get through school. So it was a full scholarship. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then since then, what you decided to do was what?
I went back. When I left school, I went back and started working with homeless LGBT youth for quite some time. I worked with Metropolitan Community Church of New York. There's their program called Sylvia's Place. I was an overnight counselor there for about 5 years, and I went on to work with New Alternatives for homeless LGBT youth, and focusing on programming and life skills training for our young people, teaching them, like, you know, conflict resolution, anger management, communication, leadership, all that sort of stuff.
Great. Unfortunately, that's not the usual story about gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning, all the different youth that are thrown out of their homes. I mean, that this is a common story and a common problem. The story about the couch surfing, though, is what we're finding, that a lot of LGBTQ youth do. Rather than just living on the street, they figure it out. They have friends, and but you don't have a place to live. You can't go to school regularly, usually, and just all those kinds of things that that hinder your life.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you have any contact with your family at all now?
Yeah, I do. You know, after a while, you have to say you're going to respect me, or I'm not going to be around, and. That's what I did. Dan Savage says, you know, like, there's a lot of power. You have a lot more power than you think. And if you draw a line and say, like, I won't accept this, it actually worked. And for a few years of not having much communication with them, now when I go home, I go see my family, I speak with my mom and everybody pretty freely, and they're awesome.
Do they have any regret for having thrown you out?
Yes, they do. They do, and it's a very weird dynamic because I can tell there's a lot of guilt there, and there's always a separation from me and the rest of the family because I don't have the same connections. It's like the last 10 years were like wiped away. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you have any particular friendships with other members of your family? Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have 6 brothers.
Oh, okay.
So
friendly with them, or did they do anything to help you while you were on the street?
It was mostly really. Everybody really took care of themselves.
Okay.
And there's a lot of love there, but we all needed to make sure that we were okay.
Okay. So. And I was even thinking, like, even cousins that just. So you had no extended family, even cousins, and who said, well, we'll take him in? It was none of that.
No, I was the, like I said, it was a very fundamentalist, born-again Christian family.
So the whole family.
Yeah, and so it took a lot of time for us to even get to the point where we can communicate with each other. They just didn't believe I was right or whole as a person, so... Huh.
But there is guilt.
Yes, there's guilt there now because I think, I mean, with the world's changing a little bit, and I think they're starting to realize that maybe they were wrong.
I grew up in New York City with all of us Jews and Italians. There wasn't any guilt there. If they didn't absorb something, it's like, what good is their Bronx culture? Let's go over to Zachary. We haven't heard a whole lot. Your part of the country. Where are you from originally?
From Washington State.
Washington State, a good marriage equality state, but not one that you're planning to move to. You're moving to Iowa.
I've been to Washington State. It's very nice.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Your family was not like that. You were accepted when you were young. Tell us a little bit your background and why you decided to do the ride.
Specifically why I decided to do the ride. I just got done with the Peace Corps about 2 months ago, and was in Belize, Central America, and started an LGBTQ youth group in my little town that I was living in. And we wanted to celebrate peace and equality, so we made up a random day, and we wanted to celebrate it. We got a mayor proclamation and some other leaders to come out. We had the ambassador of the United States come and visit with us for Belize. And we had a big thing. We had a big mural, and we were using a lot of LGBTQ symbolism, big rainbows, peace, dove, hearts. And someone from the community had worked in the States for about 20 years as a pastor up here, I think in Chicago, and she noticed that we were using a lot of LGBTQ symbolism, and so went to the media for about a week and was just kind of lambasting us using the same rhetoric about God doesn't love you, homosexuality is wrong, and we need to repent, and we're promoting sin. And it really just inspired me to see where there was room for reconciling between the queer community and also the faith community, and that they can exist in the same realm and within our identities. We can be both queer and people of faith. And so that's why I came to the ride. When I came out, I did have a different experience than JD. My family all waited for me to come out, but when I did come out, they all said, you know, what we knew, we've known, or why did you take so long, or, you know, so there was a lot of, like, it wasn't very a big surprise. So my family was very open and affirming and loving in that sense.
That's more my experience. Yeah. My mother told me, I didn't tell her.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same kind of thing. And so friends and family and even my church was open and welcoming. So,
what denomination were you?
I grew up Catholic, but I went to Presbyterian church.
Yeah, I mean, Catholic, it's obviously. I'm not talking about the Pope. I'm talking about the religion. The only states and countries that, well, there are a couple of countries that there are exceptions. Most of the places that have passed marriage equality are places with big Catholic populations. So despite what the Vatican wants you to believe, Catholics are, actually in New York, Catholics pulled ahead of Jews in being for marriage equality.
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
Yeah.
I was furious. What's wrong with you Jews? Letting the Catholics get ahead of you socially and culturally. But so your experience and in doing this ride, I'm sure you two have talked, you and J.D., what's the difference in what you're seeing? Having grown up in a family where you were accepted, I'm sure when you saw resistance, like in Nashville, J.D., I'm sure you kind of looked at that and thought, yeah, well, I know what this is like. I'm sure for you, Zachary, it would be more surprising.
Well, yes, and but also kind of no, in the sense that, like, I think that we all experience different parts of oppression, or what we like to talk about in Soul Force, and especially in the Quality Ride, is about intersectionality. So as someone of color, I'm Native American. So, you know, understanding that different parts of identity experience different pain or hurt, or so yes and no, in the sense that we may not experience pain through our LGBTQ story and identity, but, you know, in other parts, whether it's because we're people of color or because we are different class or ableist or ableism, or, you know, so I think that that answer would be kind of yes and no. And so
so do you get any, like, pushback from, you have friends that are outside of the faith community? I mean, do you have friends that give you slack for actually being a part of Soul Force or doing this ride?
So that actually, because even hearing you speak a little bit earlier about, you know, Dallas Baptist University and other places not necessarily having the perception that they're open and affirming spaces, I think a lot of, especially Christian folks, would not necessarily, that'd be surprising to hear that, oh, they don't seem like people that are necessarily open and affirming. I think.
And with Dallas Baptist, I don't want to make it sound like,
oh, no,
they're open, and but
yeah,
they're open to having a discussion.
Right. Right, but I think the idea that that there is angst and anxiety that, oh, there are people that are in this community that do want to have that conversation, that people are shocked that that's shocking to other people, I think. I think as far as for a lot of LGBTQ folks, I think that I know for me in my life, I've definitely, I think when I told my sister that I was joining this, joining part of Soul Force, and a lot of the work that I've done previously was within religious communities around LGBTQ issues, her piece was always like, are they trying to convert you? Are they, like, what's happening? And so just even explaining that, you know, that if you are an LGBTQ person of faith, that you have a right to be able to walk into a space that is welcoming and feels good for your spirit, and whether you're able to feel welcome and affirmed. If you're not an LGBTQ person of faith, this conversation is still about you, because when we're looking at political rhetoric, when we're talking about, you know, people that are getting kicked out of their houses, when we're talking about people that are being abused, we're talking about people that are being discriminated against, it's coming back to religion. So we need to be willing to meet people and talk to people in their language to be able to move forward.
So have you talked to people who are not necessarily of faith, mm-hmm, who, and, as far as, like, strategy, as far as how to talk to someone who is of faith, of, you know, how to prepare yourself for that conversation with that minister or with that anti-gay protester that's out on the street? Do you ever have those kind of conversations with people who don't necessarily are of faith but want to know how to use your strategies to be able to talk to other people.
I mean, I think also one thing that, I mean, that's the Equality Ride. That's what we do. So I think people also assume that everyone who's on the Equality Ride is someone who's necessarily feels very much a part of a faith community. And so the reality is we're all over the map.
Yeah.
And so part of the Equality Ride is about being able to reach these students and these administrators at these schools. And part of it's about building activists, right? So that, mm-hmm. again, that regardless of if we're people that are Christian, if we're people, for me, I grew up as Christian and Muslim, like if we're people that are atheists, if we're people that whatever, that we all need to be able to come to the table to talk about this mm-hmm. stuff. So I think that's very much a part of our work, is that regardless of how you feel about it.
We need to take a break. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Leukemia.
Osteosarcoma.
Neuroblastoma.
The average age of children diagnosed with cancer is 6, and they will experience things most of us won't in a lifetime. CureSearch for Children's Cancer funds children's cancer research at hospitals in your community. The CureSearch Walk, to celebrate and honor children affected by cancer. Money raised helps provide treatment to children fighting cancer in your area. CureSearchWalk.org to register for a walk near you.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel. We have some of the riders from the Equality Ride that's coming through. It's crossing the country, coming through Dallas this week. In Dallas since Monday, stopped at SMU, stopped at... help me. It's early in the morning, and just because we said it five times.
UNT
and MCC of Greater Dallas this afternoon. You'll be at Cathedral of Hope, and tomorrow going to Dallas Baptist University for a nice chat. And I mean that seriously. The people that I spoke to really were looking forward to talking. And then ending up at Midway Hills Christian Church tomorrow evening, which is a nice way to end the evening, because I love the people at Midway Hills. They're just a nice, warm group, and you'll get a nice send-off from there. Cole, we were just talking a little bit about people's stories and about reconciling and the idea of being able to go into a church and not feel threatened. That's such an odd concept to me, having not grown up with religion being that kind of threat at all. It was, just part of who I am, and I was always accepted. But Cole, what were you going to add to that?
Well, I think the reality is that if I put the word Christian and the word queer or the word trans into the same sentence, people... in all parts of those identities are going to go running, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And one of the teachings of nonviolence that is so critical to the work that we do is that the opposite of slavery is not freedom. The opposite of slavery is actually community, right? Because if I free myself from the shackles of some form of oppression only to wind up isolated, then I haven't actually gained anything. And so the Equality Ride approaches this work in this sort of radical way that says, you, Fred Phelps, you, Jerry Falwell, you, Dallas Baptist University, you, conservative Christian, I want to be in community with you.
Mm-hmm. You know, the name that you just mentioned, I happen to love him, and that's Fred Phelps. Mm-hmm. I have a soft spot in my heart for Fred. We had him here about, is it almost 2 years now?
Yeah, like
it's almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And he was here to protest my synagogue and the Holocaust Museum.
Mm.
And here's what I love about him. When you're that extreme that you're going to protest a Holocaust museum, everybody else who's on the right has to go running from him. So it pushes them more to our side to see that, oh, yeah, well, I guess there is a line that you can cross that you become so disgusting that nobody's going to take you seriously. My favorite part of that day, and you were there, Letitia, mm-hmm. my favorite part of that day was one of the Dallas police officers who was separating Fred from the counter-protesters was ready to just belt one of them. And I was holding the police officer back and explaining to him, no, that's what they want. But Have you met some people along the way who you felt were that extreme, that there was just no sense of community? They just felt, my way is right. I don't want you as part of our community here. We don't want you to be a religious person because that goes against my thinking. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that this year we have yet to encounter that sort of violent or very obvious violence or counter-protesters in any sort. In 2008, that was not true, and in fact, I have a really distinct memory of visiting Louisiana College in Pineville, Louisiana, when we were hosting a nighttime candlelight vigil with the Equality Ride.
And these are Letitia's peeps.
All right, that's
yeah,
right.
I went to school close to Pineville, so I know what you're talking about.
You know that region.
Yes.
So there were, surprisingly, a lot of community members that came out to support us, and we were divided, however, from a huge crowd of students by a line of police.
Yeah.
There were, however, I think about three students who were down on the sidewalk behind us, behind our vigil line, pacing back and forth. And there was one young man who had one of those huge, heavy flashlights, a mag light, and he was just tapping it in his hand. And periodically, they would stop behind us and lay hands on us and essentially try to pray out the gay. And this young man...
Did it work?
I'm still here. but this one young man with the flashlight was muttering under his breath, presumably praying, with this really dangerous sort of weapon in his hand. And I remember when he stopped behind me thinking in my head, I'm about to get my head bashed in, and really having to kind of ground myself in nonviolence in that moment and commit to that. And in fact, I was not hit in the head. But eventually I stepped away and approached him and offered to actually trade him my headlamp for his flashlight. He didn't want that, but he took his flashlight and threw it over the crowd into the bushes. The beautiful part of that story, though, is that afterwards, the bus left, we went back to our hotel, and as we pulled into the parking lot, a pickup truck pulled in into the same parking lot and shut off its lights. And, you know, it's been kind of a stressful evening, and we're all feeling pretty anxious. And so I found some of the more intimidating people on the bus, or physically strong people on the bus, to step outside and see what was going on. I weigh in at about 1:30 on a good day, so I wasn't the first one to step off the bus. And it turns out that they were two students from Louisiana College who were closeted and who were gay, and had followed the bus back to the hotel because they had never met openly LGBTQ people who were also people of faith and who were also people carrying this message that God loves and affirms them just the way they are.
And who knows whether you saved their lives?
Who knows?
By doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And when I say that, I don't mean it figuratively. I mean, who knows whether they were at a point in their lives where they were so desperate that who knows what they would have done. So, J.D., were you ever that in a position where you felt that desperate?
Yeah, I actually attempted to commit suicide when I was 16, and thankfully it didn't work out. And I think, like, this is... That's one of the things that actually brought me to the ride, was watching the news and seeing all a good number of our young people committing suicide, and I felt that I had put myself in a place where I was safer, where I felt more comfortable, where I was able to avoid these conversations to feel more comfortable, and that wasn't doing any justice to the young people who are still in these situations. And that's when it clicked that until I'm willing to make myself uncomfortable and have these conversations, that nothing was going to change. Mm-hmm. So, like I said before, I was very fortunate. I've had a few people in my life who have committed suicide, or who have been victims of hate crimes, or just victims of young people living on the street without protection, without, you know, family. So, yeah.
Mason, How many of these rides have you gone on? Mason is co-director of the ride. Yeah, so.
This is actually my first ride.
Oh, okay.
So I get to, you know, be experiencing new things, and I feel really blessed to be part of the leadership team, but definitely my first time.
Well, then, there goes that.
What's the average age of all the Equality Riders? Because y'all are pretty young.
Now you're asking me to do, like, some math stuff.
No, actually, JD's old.
I thought you were like 18 years old. I swear.
Everybody does.
He's old.
I mean, we're between. So when people apply for the ride, you're supposed to be between 18 and 30. So at this point, we're between the ages of 19 and 31.
Okay.
So all of us here, actually in this room, all of us are over 25 here. So most people assume that we're college students or that we're younger. Like, oh no, I pay bills with my name on them. Please.
And Cole is a college student, but getting a master's.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The others are not, and these are the old ones. the ones who could get up at 5 a.m. to get here on time.
I know. I was just amazed. I said, oh my God, they're here at 5:30 in the morning. Well, 6:30 in the morning. I was like, well, then, oh, they're 12. They're over 20, so they're responsible.
Or did an all-nighter.
Yeah.
Right. Cole, you did one of the other rides. So are you seeing going across country? And I guess it's different schools, different places, so it's not necessarily apples to apples. But are you seeing that the attitude is changing?
I think there's certainly a shift in the way that schools see the Equality Ride and see Soul Force. So this is now our fifth tour, and people are maybe finally beginning to believe that we are an organization that is grounded in nonviolence and committed to that principle and that philosophy. And so, whereas in the past, especially in 2006, 2007, 2008, those first three rides, we had a lot of instances where schools would shut their gates and not allow us on campus at all. And we would go so far as to engage in civil disobedience in some of those situations. Now more and more schools are recognizing that conversation is actually not as scary as they once thought it might be, and that allowing us onto campus is potentially the more Christian thing to do. So we're getting more access. I think that does, however, present a certain challenge in that one of the strategies or one of the things that makes nonviolence effective is contrast, right? So with nonviolence, if you're comparing, an elderly lesbian couple to Fred Phelps, who's screaming and holding really mean signs, it's very clear who is doing the more loving thing, right? I think that one of the challenges that we face now, as we're experiencing more hospitality in a sense, is demonstrating that though violence in the physical or verbal sense isn't apparent, spiritual violence is still very real. And so the impact of, for example, the rhetoric, love the sinner, hate the sin, that's really damaging. And we need to confront that, and we need to continue to resist that nonviolently.
Don't you think, though, that love the sinner, hate the sin, don't you think that they think that they're being actually fairly loving? That, well, we're accepting you. Just hate what you do, hate everything about you, I hate who you are, but I love you.
I mean, I think, yeah, so I think that that's another sort of piece that I think a lot of folks don't get to see, is that a lot of folks that are sort of giving that rhetoric do actually feel like they're coming and are coming from a place of love and genuinely feel like they're saving your soul. What we talk to people about, especially if you're talking about Christian community, is like looking at the fruit of your works. Okay, so like if you are someone who is saying love and your love is causing people to commit suicide or throw their kids out on their out on the streets or causing someone to physically act aggressively towards another person or exclude someone from your community, that's not necessarily what love looks like. So how can we as people of faith, or how can folks as people of faith reconstruct how love becomes loving?
When you get to Dallas Baptist, what message do you want to bring to them? And I'm sure that's part of it. Zachary or Cole, what message do you want to bring to them? How would you like to start a conversation with them?
Well, I guess it's just important that they understand that, A, that there are people that identify both as people of faith and people that are LGBTQ identified. So just seeing that there are people that have found a way to reconcile that, whether through the Bible or with their church. I guess that.
Okay. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you. Any other last message that you want to?
I just want to make sure that people can, if they would like to know more about us, they can visit equalityride.com. It's a great resource, not only if you're at a school, but also just to get in touch with us if you have any more questions. So equalityride.com, we're all on there. And if you'd like, we take donations, too, because we still are trying to get across the country. So.
Okay.
We'll have bills to pay for that.
You do. Fortunately, you're it's the Dallas way. They got it paid for here from local groups.
Yes.
Anybody who'd like to meet you, see what you do firsthand, you'll be at Cathedral of Hope tonight starting at 5? 5:30 you get there, and service there is at 7, I believe.
Yes.
You'll be talking, chatting, socializing, doing service, having a nice dinner. Join them. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Now, our guest next week is David Chard, who is the Dean of Education at SMU.